This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I am your host, Tim Murray. Follow me on Twitter at @1TimMurray, and a gentleman that you know from this podcast feed. Good to have him back after he's been busting his hump on the College Football Betting Guide, which is available at VSiN.com, as well as all the other guides we have over at VSiN. It is Adam Burke. Mr. Burke in the flesh. We're doing this instead of a late Monday night. We're just chopping it up next to each other.
I know. You don't have to walk your dog after the show you usually do, because, in fact, we actually have to do VSiN primetime right after the show. But, no, good to be back, man. Good to chat some of the conferences I did here for the guide, which, by the way, if you have not become a VSiN Pro subscriber to get the 2024 College Football Betting Guide, now's the time to do it.
Now, a little inside baseball. No one would know this, but I'm just going to tell them anyways. So we are recording this on a Thursday afternoon. Adam and I are co-hosting VSiN Primetime, which, by the way, you can catch every weeknight, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. We started this podcast a little late because we had to watch the United States come from behind to beat Nikola Jokic in Serbia 95 to 91. So we will get this podcast done in as much brief fashion as we can, because we got a show to do at 3 o'clock Pacific time. So let's jump right into it. You broke down the ACC, the AAC, and we're going to get into all of the conferences that you broke down. But let's start with the ACC, the Power 5 conference that you broke down. And I want to start with the best bet. North Carolina, in our best bet portions of the guide, you are not only high on the Tar Heels, but you are bullish on the Tar Heels, looking for an alt win total. Drake May ain't walking through that door. What intrigues you with UNC?
Yeah, so first of all, I mean, I guess it's Power 4 this year.
That's
which
right.
I'm still trying to get used to, with the fact that we have just the Pac-2 now, and of course all the realignment stuff I'm sure you've talked about on all these previous podcasts throughout the summer. But, you know, just still something for us to all keep in mind and kind of get accustomed to. But yeah, I mean, North Carolina, you know, I also think that if you're looking for a long shot, if you're looking for a big time price in the ACC, North Carolina might be the one to look at, because I know that Mack Brown's seat is very, very hot there in Chapel Hill. But while they lose Drake May, they bring in Max Johnson, 47-12 touchdown interception ratio over his collegiate career, has an elite running back in Omarion Hampton, who had over 1500 yards last year. North Carolina always finds wide receivers. That's just kind of what they do. They always have a good offense, but it's the defense this year that I think could be really, really good. They took a big step forward last year under Gene Chizik, went from 114th in yards per play allowed to 65th. Now they bring in Jeff Collins, and Jeff Collins is a guy, very successful DC at Mississippi State and at Florida. I mean, Mississippi State, when you think about when Jeff Collins was there, they weren't on par with the Alabamas and Auburns and LSUs of the world, but they always hung tough in the majority of those games. So I think the defensive coordinator upgrade here is really big at North Carolina. I have them favored in 10 games, and one of their underdog roles is a half-point underdog to NC State. So that's a toss-up type of game for me. I think the Tar Heels over 8.5 wins plus 180, or the best number you can find out there, is really, really worth a look.
Yeah, North Carolina, it's going to be an interesting year. Open up the season against Minnesota, which will be a fascinating game to watch there on that Thursday night to open up the year. As we look at the conference as a whole, and you alluded to it a little bit, that Florida State, Clemson, Miami, and then you get a little bit of a drop off. If you're looking at the futures numbers, you've got Florida State plus 290, Clemson plus 350, Miami at 4-1, NC State plus 650, Louisville 7-1. I'm not that big of a believer in Louisville this year, Adam, but when you look at that, is Clemson, and those are DraftKings odds as always, look around, is Florida State, I beg your pardon, are they the rightful favorite in this conference, in your opinion?
I think they are the rightful favorite. I mean, when I go through my power ratings and plug everything into my spreadsheet here, I mean, I do have Florida State with the most wins in this conference. I do have them power rated as the top team here. I have them with 9.52 wins. So I do have them a good amount ahead of all those other teams that are around them. I actually have SMU down for 9.15, because I think the Mustangs have a pretty easy schedule here for the first year in the ACC. But I think Florida State is a deserving favorite. That being said, they feel a little bit vulnerable to me. I don't know if DJU back in the ACC is going to be the player that we saw at Oregon State, where Jonathan Smith is just a quarterback whisperer, and we'll see what he does at Michigan State now. But, I don't know that DJU is really going to be a guy. And also, they lost a lot from that team last year. I mean, while it's Florida State and, it's the best state in the country for high school football, either them or Texas or California, kind of all 1A, 1B, 1C. Sure. There's a lot of talent in Tallahassee, but they lost a lot of production from last season. And I'm not ready to anoint them as, kind of a runaway champion here. And you get Clemson, Dabo Sweeney's portal protest, refuses to bring anybody in. Maybe the in-house talent is good enough. But, I mean, Tim, we got to talk about Miami, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we have to, because this might be the team that can actually overcome Mario Cristobal.
I was doing the college football panel at Bet Bash with Bud Elliott and Brett McMurphy. And Brett McMurphy looked at me and he kind of just like put his head down and said quietly, "I'm buying in on Miami." And it's almost like you feel dirty if you're buying in on Miami because of the, let's be honest, buffoonery of Mario Cristobal, not only at Miami, but at Oregon as well. If you remember back to the Stanford game, however many years ago that was. So let's jump to Miami. They are a team that is certainly talent rich. 9 wins is their projection, or their win total, I should say. They are a favorite week one on the road at Florida. I think that's a fascinating game. They go to Louisville off a bye week in the middle of October. They play Florida State at home. That Virginia Tech game is interesting. 9 wins seems about right. This is a team that, if the ceiling hits, right, you bring in Damian Martinez from Oregon State. Cam Ward is the prized possession that they were able to acquire via the portal. The lines of scrimmage should be solid. It feels like, to me, not to be too simplistic, it feels like it boils down to the man on the sideline and if he's going to mess things up. Miami's got the talent.
Oh, they really do. They got the talent. They got 2 really good coordinators. I like Shannon Dawson, who, as you mentioned, I mean, he gets Ward and Martinez now, which is the best backfield that he's had in his coaching career. And then you also have Lance Guidry, who did a really good job last season. Hurricanes were 30th in yards per play allowed. They were 103rd 2 years ago, which is not the type of performance you'd expect to see from the Miami defense. They have the talent. They have the coordinators. But this is also a team that lost 4 games last season in which they had a second half lead. So was that a depth issue? Was that a Mario Cristobal issue? They didn't really solve the Cristobal issue. They maybe solved the depth issue a little bit. I mean, look, I have this team favored in 10 games. Our own Steve Mackinnon does as well. Only a dog at Louisville and then a dog at home to Florida State. I think those are both very winnable games. And I'm also down on Louisville a little bit this season as well, much like you are. So that they have a very high ceiling. They've got probably the best transfer quarterback available outside of Dylan Gabriel and Cam Ward.
Fair to argue.
So, I mean, this team has all of the ingredients. It's just a matter of whether or not the chef can put them all together, and that chef is Mario Cristobal.
Well, it's funny. You talk about portal, and you already alluded to it. We go to Clemson, and Clemson, their win total now at DraftKings is sitting at a flat 9, and I think when you wrote it up for the college football betting guide, it was 9.5. So we've seen movement towards that under. It is while Mario Cristobal seems to be kind of a guy that feels like a virus at times to bet on, liking Dabo heading into this year and his inability or lack thereof to just go to the portal, I could play a little bit of devil's advocate. Garrett Riley, year 2, Cade Klubnik, another year. And I told Zachary Cohen, who did a really good job writing up the Heisman market for our guide on VSiN Primetime, I'm not falling for it. I'm not doing the Klubnik Heisman again, even though he made good points. They recruit at an elite level. They just refuse to go to the portal and plug holes. I wouldn't touch them to win the national championship, but I actually picked them, not with any real conviction, but I picked them to win the conference this year. I look at the schedule. They're going to lose week 1 to Georgia. Maybe you get a better number after that. They have to go to Tallahassee. They don't play Miami. You got to go to Virginia Tech. That's going to be a challenge. You play NC State. So they don't really, outside of Miami, avoid the big boys. So it is a challenging ACC schedule. What do you make of Clemson this year, who is the second shot to win this conference at plus 350?
I have Clemson down for 8.9 wins, so I like the under 9.5 better than where the number is now in the market. I think the number is pretty reasonable now. Look, I mean, as you mentioned, the Georgia game, I mean, I guess stranger things have happened. It does kind of feel like the only game that's close to a guaranteed loss on their schedule. I think they have a chance to beat Florida State on the road. I do them a 5-point dog in that game. But it's exactly what you said. this is a team that has a lot of high-end talent at a lot of positions. So do a lot of teams in the Power Four, specifically, you know, the upper echelon, top 10, top 15 types of teams. But they go and plug the holes in the portal, like you mentioned. Clemson could use some help on the offensive line. They could have gone out there and gotten an offensive lineman, and then maybe I'd feel a little bit better about this team, but they didn't. And the Garrett Riley relationship is really interesting because Dabo threw him under the bus a few times last year. You know, I think that obviously he's a guy who's very set in his ways, given that he doesn't use the portal. But I think the losses of guys like Tony Elliott and Brent Venables really took the wind out of his sails a little bit. I don't know that he has the same rapport with his current coordinators, although Wes Goodwin did a really good job last year of getting Clemson back to their usual defensive performance. But I don't think that Cade Klubnik is a dude. I don't either. I think he's a guy.
I think we've learned that now.
I think we've learned enough of that now. And look, I mean, while this conference isn't great, going to Blacksburg is a tough game. Going to Florida State is a tough game. I don't know that we'll find out anything about Clemson in the first game against Georgia, and maybe a pissed off Georgia team just rolls them. That's definitely a possibility because Georgia was a top four team last year and didn't get in the playoff.
Sure.
But, I mean, do we find something out on September 7th against App State? Do we find something out in that home game against NC State where they've got Grayson McCall now as the quarterback? I think maybe we find out a lot about Clemson in the month of September that maybe kind of gets me to fade them throughout the course of the season, even kind of leaning that way as of now.
So when you look at the ACC, it does feel like it's a best of three: Florida State, Clemson, Miami. We started and hit on North Carolina, who is kind of your darling sitting there at an all over at 8.5 wins. Let's get to North Carolina's arch rival. I'm not talking about Duke. I'm talking about NC State. This is a team that I think a lot of people are curious to see what this offense looks like year two of Robert Anai and no more Brendan Armstrong, who was an absolute disaster for NC State a year ago. They bring in Grayson McCall. He's played a ton of college football. Numbers kind of dipped towards the end of his run there at Coastal Carolina. You look at this NC State team sitting at plus 750 to win the conference schedule. You have a very, very challenging game week two against Tennessee, a primetime game. You've got to go to Clemson. And then after that, no Florida State on the schedule, no Miami on the schedule, no Virginia Tech on the schedule. Pretty manageable moving forward. You get Duke, you get Stanford, you get Wake Forest, you get Cal, who might be a little frisky. And then you wrap up the season on the road at North Carolina, a team that you're high on. So I understand the bullish nature that some folks have of NC State. Win total in the market sitting around 8.5. And I think you always know with NC State that you're going to get a pretty good defensive effort. The question is this offense going to look different? Because I don't know about you, but there was, a Thursday night game where this NC State team played more than good enough to beat Louisville, and they fell short because the offense was an absolute train wreck.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of questions here. I mean, first of all, the reason why they brought in Brendan Armstrong was because he knew Robert and I's system, and it just didn't work out. And, you know, Grayson McCall was hurt a lot last season. You know, he was not healthy throughout the course of the year. In fact, missed a few games. But I think it was very, very clear that he missed Jamie Chadwell, who's, of course, the head coach at Liberty now. Tim Beck is a guy who's been an offensive coordinator, but he doesn't have, you know, he doesn't have the offensive scheme that Chadwell has. And McCall kind of struggled without Chadwell, where Chadwell's offense is a lot of pre-snap motion, creating a lot of mismatches out in space, making it really easy for the quarterback in McCall, who made a lot of smart decisions, to find guys that were wide open in space. Will NC State be able to do that in this Robert and I offense? Because keep in mind, I mean, it's not only that, you know, Armstrong was a guy that, you know, was familiar with the Anai system. He also led the team in rushing yards and really wasn't that effective on a per carry basis. So they're going to have to change some things here, I think, with McCall, who's mobile enough to avoid danger, but not exactly a guy who can go out there and run. There's a little bit of turnover on the defensive side as well, but you alluded to it, the schedule. I mean, this is a team that I have projected for 8.48 wins, and I'm not really that high on them because their schedule is so weak. So I think they are more likely to go 9-3 than they are to go 8-4. But this is not a team that I really have a strong feel for. I think Dave Doran is a pretty good head coach on the whole. But this is also a Wolfpack team that hasn't won a bowl game since 2017. So, you know, they are fortunate that the schedule is weak, but I would be concerned with that neutral site game against Tennessee, with the game at Clemson, with the game at North Carolina. But they will probably look pretty good in most of their home games.
Maybe, I don't want to say the sexiest team this offseason, but a team that has continued everywhere you look, especially in our world, the college football nerdery world. Everyone talks about this Virginia Tech team. Oh, look at the production. Bill Conley pointing out that Virginia Tech, number one in the country in returning offensive production, 13th in defensive production. That goes together as 84% returning production. That is fourth best in the country. A lot of excitement. I fell for it a little bit. I took 150-1 long shot on Kyren Drones to win the Heisman Trophy. You look at this schedule. Virginia Tech opens up at Vanderbilt. Play Marshall, who they lost to, by the way, last year, at Old Dominion, and then a pesky Rutgers team, but they get them at home. The biggest game of the regular season seems to be a road trip to South Beach for an old-school Big East rivalry there on September 27th as they take on Miami. Win total sits at 8.5, juice to the under, plus money to the over. A lot of people high on this Virginia Tech team, but the question is, you know, as sometimes we see, Adam, has the market gone too far with this win total? Because I think some offseason numbers had them at like 7.5.
Yeah, there's definitely been a big adjustment here. And I got to say, just as a general talking point, college football is more fun when Virginia Tech is good.
Beamer ball,
I mean,
baby.
I mean, the Enter Sandman intro, I'm willing to admit this, and I'm sure you did too. When we were coming out of COVID, and you had the full stadium with Enter Sandman, like, I have no ties to the Virginia Tech program. Don't really care one way or the other if they're all that good. Like I said, I think it's better for college football when they are. But I definitely shed more than a tear watching that intro with things kind of returning to a little bit of normalcy. So it's fun. You get those Thursday night games in Blacksburg that wind up on ESPN, and you know they're always really intriguing. This is an intriguing team in general for exactly the reasons you mentioned. Ton of returning production. Kyren Drones is a guy who, you know, he's a true, legitimate, dual-threat type of guy. 20 carries for 176 yards in the bowl game. And that's something that I think is a little bit worth looking at here, where I think they kind of realize with the extra prep time, let's use this kid's legs and let's see what we get out of him. Now, of course, durability may end up being a question long-term for him this season, but I think they found something on offense. They certainly found something on defense. They went from 96th in sacks in 2022 to 11th in 2023. And we know they're kind of defensive back university. So if you're going to pressure the quarterback, they're going to force some turnovers. I think this is a really, really high quality team. My win total projection is about 9 wins. Like the bye weeks are pretty well timed. The schedule is pretty friendly. As you mentioned, they should be good. Are they win the ACC good? I don't know. Is Drones going to be a possible Heisman guy? I don't know. The one thing is with the Heisman Trophy, the last 6 quarterbacks to win it have all had 40 plus passing touchdowns. So that's going to be the difficult thing for him, where he's going to get some of them on the ground. If he's a 1,000-yard rusher and, you know, a 2,500, 3,000-yard passer, he should be in the discussion. But I think this will be a really quality team in the ACC.
All right, the next one is another team that has gained a lot of traction this offseason. It wasn't an official play on the podcast, but I do have a win total over. And it's the one that I feel, easy for me to say now until they start playing games, it's the one that I feel kind of just a little off about, and that's SMU. SMU, you look at the schedule, Adam, and boy, it's a gift from the ACC folks, where you play Florida State at home. However, I think it's a good scheduling spot to get Florida State. You do have to go to Louisville, but then after that, it's Stanford, Duke, Pittsburgh, BC, Virginia, Cal, all games where you should be a favorite in. So you're an underdog in 2 games. Win total was 7.5. It got bet up to 8. There's an 8.5 out there in the betting market. Preston Stone is back for another go-round. Rhett Lashley, year 3. This is an SMU team that I've heard some folks have some hesitancy on, in the fact that you're making that big jump. And last year, whether you want to count it or not, they lost their bowl game to Boston College. They lost to TCU. They lost to Oklahoma. They went 11-3, and their 3 losses were all to Power 4 teams. So there certainly is some skepticism. Year-over-year recruiting is just not there yet. I'm curious your thoughts on this SMU team, because they have been one. You know, we had Kelly Ford, who does his own models. He's not a better. He just does his own models. And he had them around 9 wins. I think Tyler Shoemaker has them around 9 wins. You said you'd go over the 8 that is sitting out there. So what do you make of the Ponies in year 1 in the ACC?
I have 9.15 wins. And a lot of it is schedule driven. I mean, they will get Preston Stone back, which will be nice for them. Rhett Lashley's done a good job here with this team. But you mentioned it. I mean, they were 0-3 last year against Power 5, now Power 4 teams. And back in 2022, they lost both of their Power 5 games, but also lost to Cincinnati, UCF, and BYU, who all joined the Big 12 for the 2023 season. So they're effectively 0-8 in their last eight games against Power 5 competition. And now, while the schedule is pretty soft at the beginning, Nevada looks, you know, they're in transition once again. Houston Baptist.
That number, by the way, has steamed up, I think, to 26 for that week zero game.
On the road,
yikes,
too. Yeah, I forgot that is a week zero game. That's a good point. And then BYU, their big favorite in that game, where the BYU program is just, they've kind of hit some snags, to put it nicely. The rivalry game against TCU, I think, will be really fascinating for SMU before they start ACC play. The more I look at this, though, I kind of tend to agree with you, where my numbers like them. My numbers like them based on the schedule. I don't think that their ACC schedule is that big of a step up from playing the Tulanes and the Memphises and the UTSAs of the world like they did in the AAC last year. But you got to prove it to me. You got to prove to me you can beat a Power 5 team. I mean, they just recruit on a different level, you know, than the Group of 5 teams do. So we'll see if SMU is able to do it. As you mentioned, I mean, the schedule is fantastic for them, and they have a good amount of returning production, but prove it to me.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way. Look, I can't, I mean, I guess in theory I could take an 8.5 under and try to middle it, which there is an 8.5 juiced heavily to the under, but I'm going to roll with it and, you know, see what happens. But I'm also kind of glad I didn't give it out officially on the podcast. Before we get to the kind of the quote cellar dwellers and just your best of the rest, so to speak, let's hit on Louisville, who has the next highest win total. We haven't gone deep in on Coach Brohm's squad. Tyler Shuck heads to Louisville. Yes, he is still eligible to play college football. This is a team who has a win total of 8.5. They have to go to Notre Dame in a revenge spot after they beat Notre Dame in a primetime game a year ago. They do get Clemson on the road. They play their arch rival Kentucky. They play Miami. No Florida State, so that is the one team they do avoid. Very manageable first couple games of the season before they head to Notre Dame, where they're likely, you know, going to be around a 9-10 point underdog. You and I already said it. We're not that high on this Louisville team. So take us through your thoughts on the Louisville Cardinals.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is a team that they're going to play a lot of road games in the back part of the year. So I think that's a little bit of a detriment for them. Also, I'm just not a Tyler Shuck guy. I mean, Oregon and Texas Tech transfer.
Can he stay healthy?
I assume that Jeff Brohm, you know, knows how to isolate and evaluate quarterback talent. I mean, he certainly should, having played the position himself and having had some pretty decent quarterbacks throughout the course of his coaching career. I just don't know that Shuck is the guy. I know he's got a lot of talent around him. Colin Lacey is the best wide receiver that you've never heard of, coming out of South Alabama as a transfer. Chris Bell's a fast guy as well. But I think the biggest issue for Louisville this year is, I don't know if they're going to be able to run the football. They had over 2,000 rushing yards last year. Juwan Jordan and Isaac Garendo, both now in the NFL. So, you know, I think that's a little bit of a, they had 24 rushing touchdowns last year on a team that you would think would be very pass happy with Brohm and, you know, with his quarterback, Jack Plummer, who came over with him from Purdue. So I don't think they're going to run the football as effectively. And what happens if you can't run the football and you don't have as much offensive balance? Well, it starts to hurt the defense. And I think that Louisville's defense will be on the field a lot more. Cardinals were 17th in average time of possession per game last year. I don't think that'll be the case this year. I think they take some significant steps back here. I like under 8.5. I have them with about 7.85 wins. So I like under 8.5 here on this team, where I think they could be a bit of an underachiever, especially when you consider all the other teams in that range in the ACC. I think Louisville's the one that I would sell the most stock in.
All right, as we get to best of the rest, and I'm putting air quotes around best of the rest, Syracuse, Georgia Tech, Cal, Pitt, BC, Wake Forest, UVA, Stanford, and Duke. I wrote this up for the guide, gave it out on the podcast. Juiced has moved a little bit, but it still would look this way. I went under Duke conference wins, and the reason I did this, and I talked about it a bit on the podcast, Adam, prior, which is the market's moved on their overall win total, right? 6.5 down to 5.5. There's some fives out there in the market, and I debated whether playing 5.5 or under 2.5 conference wins. Their non-conference schedule is Elon at Northwestern, UConn, Middle Tennessee State. They're going to be a favorite and a decent size favorite in Elon, UConn, and Middle Tennessee State, and Northwestern's kind of a pick 'em. I would lean Northwestern, but I'd rather just go with the under in the conference because their toss-up games in the conference both come on the road at Georgia Tech, at Wake Forest. They play Virginia Tech, Florida State, SMU, and North Carolina, who you are high on at home. And they also get Miami and NC State. I mean, this team does not get any of the bad teams outside of Wake Forest, really, in this conference. So I'm not the biggest believer in Manny Diaz as a head coach. He's a great defensive mind. They lost a lot in the portal when you think about Riley Leonard, Jordan Waters. They lost a bunch of pieces to the NFL as well. Aeneas Peebles went to Virginia Tech. RJ Oben went to Notre Dame, both edge rushers there. This is a tough one for me for Duke, and I would be a bit surprised if they had a bowl game. But for me, instead of banking on them losing a game in the non-con, I just went under 2.5 conference wins for the Blue Devils.
Yeah, I can't argue with this one at all. I have them a dog in every one of their conference games. So the idea that they would pull off upsets in three of them with Manny Diaz, I think, is a little bit tricky. And look, I mean, the defense was really good last year with Mike Elko. So if the defense is really good, that's all well and good. That's great. But what will the offense look like? I think, you know, the offense is a little bit of an unknown because Malik Murphy is a guy who was very highly touted coming out of high school, but it was a numbers game at Texas, right? He wasn't going to start over Quinn Ewers. He wasn't going to start over Arch Manning. So it makes sense for him to go. And, you know, I mean, he found a spot where I think he should play right away at Duke. So we'll see if that is the direction that they end up going. But yeah, I mean, I have them a dog in all of their ACC conference games here. I think we could touch on all of the teams in this conference, but I think one that we need to mention here, you know, everyone's talking about Syracuse and how Fran Brown really attacked the portal with great efficiency and great success, bringing in a guy like Kyle McCord, you know, bringing in some of the other pieces that they've brought in. But I want to talk about Georgia Tech for a minute because I don't think Georgia Tech is getting talked about enough.
I agree.
When you are a middle-of-the-road power conference team, right, guys want to play spotlight games. You know, you have Power 4 level talent, but guys want to play in the spotlight. They want to play at the big boy programs. They want to be playing, you know, with the main broadcast crew on ESPN or ABC or CBS or whatever. They don't really want to be, you know, the team that plays the late ACC game on Saturday that 18 people are watching on TV, stuff like that. But the fact that Georgia Tech kept virtually everybody together from last year's team, including quarterback Haynes King, who it turns out is a really, really good player. Something is going right in Atlanta here. I don't know if it's Brent Key. I don't know if maybe they're kind of pulling a Dabo and just paying their own players and keeping them around, all of that. But Georgia Tech has a good amount of returning production, specifically on the offensive side, and didn't have a mass exodus to the portal. There's something to be said about being a mediocre team and keeping your best players. So I think Georgia Tech is a team that could surprise a little bit. I do like them over 5 wins. My win total projection isn't that much higher than that. But again, it's kind of reading the context of where this roster sits.
I can't get there on the win total, but I do agree that they're going to pick someone off. And whether it be Notre Dame in a big game there at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, whether it be Miami, NC State, Florida State to start the year over in Dublin. I think this is going to be a feisty team, but I just can't get there because the schedule is really challenging when you look at it. Florida State at Syracuse, whether you like them or not, that's just kind of an annoying place to go to. At Louisville, at North Carolina, home to Notre Dame, or neutral against Notre Dame, at Virginia Tech, Miami, NC State, and then at Georgia. That schedule, I mean, realistically, they're a clear favorite in Georgia State, VMI, Duke, and that's it.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I mean, I think they will pick a couple of teams off this year.
I think they're a bet-on type of team for sure.
Yeah, and I think, you know what? Even if you don't play a win total or something like that, I think they could be an excellent ATS team. Because the other thing about this team, they brought in Duke's defensive coordinator, Tyler Santucci, who Mike Elko didn't take with him to Texas A&M. So I think Georgia Tech kind of gets a gain here, where last year they gave up over 200 yards per game on the ground. When you get a Mike Elko disciple as your defensive coordinator, that unit is going to get better immediately. So I think Georgia Tech is a really good ATS team for the upcoming season.
All right, we're going to take a quick break on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Continue as Adam broke down not only the ACC, but the American Athletic Conference and the Sun Belt. So up next, we will break down the AAC with Adam. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back talking the AAC with Adam Burke, who wrote it up for the VSiN College Football Betting Guide, which you can get now, VSiN.com/subscribe. When you start to talk about the Group of Five conferences, I just like to start off this way, and I asked Wes this regarding the MAC earlier this week. Memphis is plus 220 to win this conference. Tulane is plus 350. UTSA plus 450. Is Memphis the rightful favorite in this conference?
I would say no. You know, Memphis brings back a ton, and I think that's very, very attractive for Ryan Silverfield's team. I mean, Seth Hennigan, it feels like he's played quarterback for about 20 years in college. He's been a three-year starter here so far. You know, they got a good they have the opportunity to upgrade on the defensive side. They actually were 114th in yards per play against last year, 95th in scoring defense, but the offense was great. The offense will be great again, but if the defense doesn't improve any, I think this team is vulnerable. So I actually would favor Tulane in this conference.
Tulane changing coaches. Willie Fritz leaves to go to Houston, but Tulane, credit them. They go out and they get John Summerall from Troy. When you broke this team down, Willie Fritz was a very, very good coach, had a ton of success, none more than, you know, what we saw in that year that Tulane was able to go to the Cotton Bowl and beat USC, come back in impressive fashion. A little step back last year, but still a solid year. And then he bolts to go to Houston as he finally gets that Power Four job that he had been desiring. How big of a drop off, if at all, is Summerall taking over for Fritz?
I could say long term that it might be a drop off, but for this season, I don't really think that it is. First of all, they get Memphis at home in the finale, so I think that's something that's a positive for them in terms of looking at them to potentially win this conference. But also, Summerall brought over his offensive coordinator, Joe Craddock, his defensive coordinator, Greg Gasparotto, and not only that, he brought over a lot of his Troy players. So even though these aren't technically returning starters for Tulane, they're by and large returning starters for Troy's program. And yeah, the AAC is a little bit of a step up from the Sun Belt, but Troy has consistently been a really quality program in that conference. So I actually like this. And also, I'm very high on Oregon transfer Ty Thompson. You know, we talked about Malik Murphy in the ACC with Duke in the previous segment. Ty Thompson was stuck behind Bo Nix for 2 years, you know, who was a top half of the first round NFL pick. And then Oregon went, well, we're going to go get Dylan Gabriel. So Ty Thompson was like, all right, cool. I'll see you guys later. He was a five-star recruit out of high school. And now he goes to Tulane where, you know, John Summerall and Joe Craddock have never really had, you know, a mobile type of quarterback. They had a guy in Gunnar Watson who was a pretty efficient passer, but not exactly much of a runner. I think Thompson could do a lot of different things for this team. Yeah, his experience is a little bit limited, but also the upside, I think, is really, really high. Troy always had a good running game. Like, that'll be the same thing here at Tulane. And the defense, again, a lot of guys who are familiar with this scheme. So I like this team. I think it's difficult from a win total standpoint because Kansas State and Oklahoma are games that they probably will not win. But they're favored in every other game for me and favored in every game in conference play.
Well, and it's worth noting this, that the odds I mentioned were courtesy of DraftKings, and that's what's in our VSiN College Football Betting Guide. But where we sit right now as we record this podcast at Circa, they have Tulane as the favorite in this conference.
I think it should be.
Plus 260. So, as always, shop around. You can't always get the best number. But Memphis is plus 275 here at Circa. And let's circle back to Memphis. You hit on them a little bit. This is a team that I agree that maybe on paper they are pound for pound the best Group of Five team out there. But looking at their schedule, Memphis has to go to Florida State, similar to Oregon having to go, or excuse me, Boise State having to go to Oregon. They also have to go to South Florida, have to go to UTSA, and have to go to Tulane. They don't avoid any of the big boys. Also in the non-con, they play Troy. Year five for Ryan Silverfield. Seth Hennigan is back for his 100th season of college football. They bring back a lot of production, and they're spending in the portal, but this is a Memphis team that I think they have a lot of talent. I think the schedule just is really challenging for them to maneuver and win this conference.
Yeah, it is. It is difficult. And I mean, they don't have a good defense. So the offense really has no margin for error. I mean, the offense last year, 15th in yards per play, 6th in points per game. But as I mentioned at the top, I mean, for Memphis to have 6.55 yards per play and almost be even in yards per play differential. Just tells you how bad this defense was last year. And they gave up the fourth most plays of 20-plus yards. They had very little success in early downs. You can move the football on them. And so that kind of creates a degree of variance in their games that I'm not really comfortable investing in. You know, while this team does have a high ceiling, while they should be favored in 10 or 11 of their 12 games, depending on how you feel about the games at UTSA and at Tulane, still, this is a team that, you know, I can't rely on a team to score like 38 points every game, you know, and invest in them in a win total or a futures market.
UTSA is a team that has had a lot of run and success, but Frank Harris, surprisingly, is still not playing college football. I just assumed he would always play college football and never leave. Schedule-wise, non-con is interesting, where you play Kennesaw State, where you're a massive favorite. Then you play Texas State and Texas. For a conference slate, though, they get Memphis at home. They have to go to ECU, which I think will be a bit of a challenge, but you avoid most of the big boys in this conference in UTSA. So I think UTSA is kind of an interesting team from a future standpoint, where you don't have to play Tulane, you don't have to play South Florida, and you get Memphis at home. What do you make of the Roadrunners this year without Frank Harris?
Yeah, without Frank Harris. First time since, what, 2010? But they haven't had Frank Harris in that program. Look, here's the thing. Harris was banged up a ton last year, right? But he still had 336 of the team's 446 pass attempts. There's not really much experience here at the quarterback position. And, you know, the top three rushers from last year are back, so maybe we see a little bit more of the ground and pound from this UTSA team. Wide receiver room is okay. But, you know, at some point, I just feel like attrition has to kind of take hold for a program like this, where I think defensively, you know, they're going to struggle a little bit. And offensively, I mean, you don't have that leader in Harris that's going to be able to convert those big third downs for you. A guy who was mobile, was able to extend drives. I do worry a little bit here about UTSA, but I will say this. We won't find out anything in Kennesaw State's first FBS game against UTSA, because Kennesaw State's a big dog there. But UTSA plays at Texas State and at Texas the next two games. They'll probably blow out Houston Baptist, as they should. But then I think they're very vulnerable going to East Carolina, a team we'll touch on here in a little bit that, yeah, I think could be significantly better this season. And the Rice game is not really a gimme either. I think UTSA could get off to a very slow start here with some of the transition with this program, particularly at the quarterback position. I don't think they miss a bowl game or anything like that, and the schedule is generally favorable. But I feel like there's a good chance that Jeff Traylor's team slides back a little bit.
All right, we are going to get to East Carolina, because that's a team that I know mutual friend and friend of the podcast, Brad Powers, is high on, and he, I believe, gave them out over their win total at some point during the offseason. I don't know what the number was. I think it was 5.5. But let's get to South Florida, because I think this is another kind of intriguing team who, you know, made a bowl game just a year ago. And this is a team, when you look at week two, they have to go to Alabama. I think all of us remember how close that Alabama game was just a year ago. South Florida, I think, intrigues a lot of people, especially when you look at Byron Brown, the quarterback there. And I think I saw him mentioning on social media that he was getting a lot of tweets and from folks regarding winning the national championship with USF and Byron Brown, because he's a dynamic quarterback. So their win total sits at 7 right now. You get Memphis at home, you get Tulane on the road, you avoid UTSA, you play Charlotte and FAU and Rice on the road. Rice could be a bit of a challenge there. What do you make of this USF team? Because I think there's a lot of intrigue for me personally on what Alex Golish's squad can be in year three.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, South Florida over the years, some pretty good quarterbacks, right? BJ Daniels, Quentin Flowers, Matt Carothy. None of those three guys had a 3,000 yard passing season. Byron Brown just did. And for good measure, he ran for over 800 yards as well. I don't know what USF had to pay him to stay in Tampa. It had to be a very significant sum of money, but they got him back. And so this offense will be unquestionably dynamic. There's no doubt about that whatsoever. Defensively, though, they gave up over 32 points per game gave up over 6 yards per play. And this is a defense that can get gassed because the offense runs at such a breakneck pace. I mean, they had 1,028 offensive plays last year. They were 105th in average time of possession. So the defense is out there a lot, even though the offense is very good, very efficient. That being said, I think 7-5 is the floor for this team, and their win total sitting out there at 7. I have it 7.57, and I realize that they've got some tough road games here in conference play and also in non-conference, but this is kind of the Memphis theory, right? Where, like, the offense is dynamic, the defense maybe not so much, but I need Memphis to get me to, like, 10 wins to go over their win total. I only need South Florida to get me to 8, and I have push protection at 7 if you find a book that has 7. So I think a South Florida team will be, if nothing else, very, very fun to watch. And if the defense takes any stride forward whatsoever, and they do have Todd Orlando, who's been around the block many a time, if the defense takes any step forward, this is a really intriguing team at a pretty decent price to win this conference. I don't know that it'll happen, but if the defense is any better, the offense should be better or about the same.
All right, let's hit on East Carolina and then kind of do the best of the rest, if any other thoughts there. But East Carolina is a team I alluded to and you mentioned. This is a team that's garnered a lot of love in the betting market this offseason, and the win total has really shot up. This is a team that really struggled a year ago, just horrendous from an offensive standpoint. Manageable non-con, but they do have to play App State and Liberty, so I guess manageable is there'll be an underdog in two of those games, but no Power 5 teams on the schedule. They get to host UTSA. They do not play Memphis, and they also do not play Tulane. Win total has moved up, like I said, to 6, and I think you and many others are a bit bullish on the boys from Greenville.
Yeah, I like the Pirates quite a bit here this season. I mean, they spent some money, finally. You know, they went out there, they kind of got some better coordinators, John David Baker specifically on the offensive side. They brought in two Power 5 transfers at quarterback, Jake Garcia, who was at Missouri and Miami, and then also Michigan State's Kattenhauser. Like, this is a program built on offense. I mean, they had Keaton Mitchell. They had Justin Hardy. They had Holton Ahlers. They've had some really, really good players come through here across the different levels of the offense. They haven't had that the last couple of seasons, but I think this year they absolutely could. And, you know, look, I mean, Mike Houston was a very, very accomplished coach when he took over at East Carolina. I don't think he's a bad coach. I think he just didn't really have the talent that he needed. And now he got a little bit more of a commitment from the athletic department to spend some money. The schedule is not ideal, but I think this is a team that certainly goes to a bowl game, as their win total and the market movement suggests, and a team that I think could, you know, be a pretty good against the spread candidate because they were so bad last year. They were 2-10. People won't think anything of them this year. You know, the recreational bettors that are out there, stuff like that, they won't think anything of East Carolina for this year. But I think a lot of us, you know, who do this for a living or who are in this community, you know, whether it's from a content creation standpoint or something else, I think we are going to believe in East Carolina here. And I think they could be a pretty good ATS team along with a pretty good straight up team.
To wrap up the AAC, so you are high on Tulane, believe they should be the favorite, and they are here at Circa, so you can get a better number at other books, including DraftKings. High on East Carolina, have some questions about others. When we look at the rest of the conference, FAU, newcomer Army, Rice, Navy, UAB, hey, Trent Dilfer, North Texas, Tulsa, Charlotte, and then, good Lord, the doldrums, that is Temple. Anything of note of the remaining AAC squads?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of things. One, if you can find a fewest wins market in college football, I think Temple is very much worth the investment there. 2.5 is their win total. I have them projected for 2.18 wins, and they don't play any FCS teams, and they play UConn on the road, where they'll be a pretty sizable dog. Our own Steve McKinnon has them over a touchdown dog in every single game this season. So if there's a fewest wins market out there,
so you're telling me to play under 2.5?
Yeah, I Temple may not win a game, to be totally honest with you. The other one is Florida Atlantic here, because correct me if I'm wrong, I think we have this perception that the Florida Atlantic football program is good, that they bring in a lot
of
talent.
Lane Kiffin ain't walking through that door.
Exactly. Lane Kiffin ain't walking through that door. And I ran this number in my preview. 22%, almost 22%. Of FAU's wins as an FBS member have been in two of Lane Kiffin's seasons when they went 11-3. This has not been a good football program, really, outside of Kiffin having those two outlier seasons. I don't think Tom Herman is a good head coach. They lost a 1,000-yard rusher in Lejonte Webster to a 1,000-yard receiver in Lejonte Webster to Colorado. Their top two running backs are gone. They don't really have anybody at the quarterback position. The defense stinks. I think FAU under 6.5 is one of my favorite plays here in the AAC.
All right, that'll wrap up the AAC preview with Adam. Make sure to check out all of the write-ups in our VSiN College Football Betting Guide. We're going to take one final break, and we're going to break down the Sun Belt. The boys from Boone destined to hoist that trophy, or could we see a surprise from a team from San Marcos, Texas?
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, wrapping it up here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Adam Burke joining me here on the podcast. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. A lot of 5-star reviews. Thank you very much. Let's keep them rolling as we get ready for another season here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. It's been a fun offseason. Had a lot of win total bets here on the podcast, and maybe have to add Temple under. I don't know. There was a lot of conviction there from Adam in that last segment. Let's run through the Sun Belt real quickly. Appalachian State heads into the year at DraftKings as the favorite at plus 275, but a team that a lot of people are excited about, Texas State. G.J. Kinney, the head coach down there at Texas State, maybe not for that long. They bring in Jordan McLeod via the transfer portal, the former James Madison quarterback. So there's a lot of intrigue regarding this Texas State team. Is App State the rightful favorite? And is there a team, Adam, you would look to bet in that futures market in the Sun Belt?
Not only do I think App State is the rightful favorite, this is one I would bet on too. And typically, you know, I think it can be a little bit difficult to bet on the short shot, especially in some of these group of five conferences where, you know, one or two key injuries and a team can be completely derailed, right? There's a lot more depth at the power four level, but I think App State is really, really well set up to be the best team in this conference. And I think by a decent margin. I mentioned it earlier in the show, Coastal Carolina took several steps back without Jimmy Chadwell last year. James Madison lost virtually everybody, including their head coach, Kirk Cignetti, who's now at Indiana.
This conference, I win. Google me.
Phenomenal quote. Just a phenomenal quote. I think the Sun Belt is, I don't want to say collapsing in on itself, but the transfer portal is not doing this conference any favors at all whatsoever. And they've always been a breeding ground for head coaches. So, you know, the fact that App State kept a lot of last year's team, kept their head coach, Sean Clark, kept their starting quarterback, Joey Aguilar, who, by the way, one season, he's already fifth in program history in passing yards. So he had a big year last year. We know that App State's going to run the football well. We know that defensively they're going to be good. Last year was the first time that App State finished outside the top 50 in yards per play on defense in their FBS history. So that was an outlier. I think they get back on track here this season. Second-year DC, Scott Sloan. Maybe year one, some transition, a little bit of difficulty. Not only do I think this team wins the Sun Belt, I wouldn't be shocked if in week two they don't give Clemson a hell of a scare in Death Valley.
The game that I, and this is no knock from for the folks in Liberty, but maybe it is. I just don't want to see Liberty in the playoff. I would think it would be unfair to the G5 teams that actually played legitimate competition. The CUSA is an absolute joke. App State, September 28th, hosts Liberty. I believe that's already been announced as a sellout. That should be a really good atmosphere down there at in Boone, North Carolina. Can the boys from Boone knock off Liberty in that showdown?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think the other thing for App State here is, you know, I mean, while Scott Sloan is a second-year defensive coordinator and didn't see Jamie Chadwell last year, Sean Clark saw Jamie Chadwell. Sean Clark knows what Jamie Chadwell wants to do on offense. And, yeah, I mean, you know, Caden Salter's a phenomenal player, but I think App State, I mean, I have them a slight favorite. I have them a 1.5-point favorite in that one. Steve Mackinnon has App State a 2.5-point favorite over Liberty. So, slight favorite role for them. I mean, I have them favored in every game outside of Clemson. So, I think App State is probably going to be an 11-win team. And I think they do beat Liberty, which is going to make things really interesting. Because if App State has a win over Liberty, rolls through the Sun Belt,
I mean, and their lone losses to Clemson.
And their lone losses, and if, especially if they play well in that game. If they win that game, I mean, they could run the table, and they could very well be in the playoff. But it's going to be tough to do over a team like Tulane or Memphis that's going to get some respect for, you know, the strength of schedule that they play. But I think App State is just clearly better than everybody on their schedule this year in conference play. And if they somehow find a way to beat Clemson, they could very well go 12-0.
Texas State is a team that I already mentioned. Win total has been on the move. It sits at 8 minus $1.35 at DraftKings. You, writing it up, projected the win total to go over. Looking at their schedule, UTSA comes to San Marcos week 2. They get Arizona State at home, which I think is a very interesting showdown there. Maybe an opportunity to pull off an upset over a Power 5 opponent. They do not play Appalachian State. The Sun Belt, one of the few conferences left that still has division. So we very likely could have, and I think most people would hope for, a Texas State versus Appalachian State Sun Belt championship, which I think would be very, very entertaining. Look, I'm looking at Steve Mackinnon right now. I believe he has them a favorite in every single game in this entire year. Now, a lot of toss-ups, you know, Troy's a toss-up, South Alabama, but what do you make of Texas State year 2 of G.J. Kinney? Actually, year 3, maybe? I think year 3 for him at Texas State.
Yeah, so the thing with Kinney here is year 2 for him, but, you know, I have them a pick 'em against UTSA at home. Every other game they're favorite in for me. And here's the thing. You would typically expect some regression when you have the level of offense that they had and your quarterback transfers to Western Kentucky and TJ Finley. But they got James Madison quarterback Jordan McLeod. So, I mean, they brought in a really, really, really elite level player for the group of five level. They bring back a lot of stuff on the offensive side. This offense will be incredible. Kinney is only going to be in San Marcos for this season. He's going to get a job somewhere else. But I think what's really fascinating here, and I'm curious to see what this looks like, and maybe we get a look in week 2 against UTSA or on the short week in week 3 against Arizona State. So G.J. Kinney promoted Dexter McCoil to defensive coordinator. He's 32 years old, and it's just his third year of being a coach. So he gave him his start at Incarnate Word when Kinney was there a couple of years ago. Must think the world of this kid. So this kid, he's a few years younger than me. But 32 for a DC is very, very young. So that's what I'm curious about. I mean, this guy probably going to have some new ideas, some different things. Texas State was a bad defense last year. I mean, they gave up 77 points to Arkansas State late in the year in one game. So that's what it's all about, man. The offense is going to be elite. Is the defense going to be able to, you know, kind of hold up its end of the bargain? But as I mentioned, you know, I think the Sun Belt is really weakening as a conference as a whole, which is disappointing to me because I love it. But I think Texas State could be a team to take advantage of that, much like I think App State could do it on the east side.
Louisiana 6-1, James Madison plus 750, South Alabama plus 850. James Madison, of course, loses Kirk Cignetti. He goes to Indiana and takes a lot of pieces. And also, they lose their quarterback. But I love the hire that James Madison brought in, bringing in Holy Cross as head coach. Let's lump Louisiana, James Madison, and South Alabama together. Major Applewhite steps in as South Alabama's new head coach as Kane Womack goes to Alabama to be their defensive coordinator. Of those three, anything jump out to you regarding the next tier in the Sun Belt?
Yeah, I'm fading South Alabama this year. Maybe Major Applewhite kind of figured it out after the three pedestrian years that he had at Houston. But the thing about this conference is this. Everybody plays offense, right? Just about everybody in this conference, with the exception of the bottom feeders like Louisiana Monroe, you know, for the most part, Old Dominion. Like, those teams struggle, but everybody else plays offense. South Alabama's strength was defense. When you can play defense in one of these types of leagues, look at what Troy has done. Look at what Appalachian State has done. When you can play defense in these leagues, you can stand out. You lose Kane Womack, who's a brilliant defensive mind, as evidenced by the fact that he's now the DC at Alabama. And you lose Corey Batune, who levels up from the DC at South Alabama to the DC at Missouri, a team that some people kind of think could be something of a dark horse in the SEC. Like, the defense is going to take a massive step back here. They bring in Gio Lopez, who's probably going to be the offense or the starting quarterback. And he's a guy just 5'11", undersized lefty, not really a huge fan. Like, the defense is going to struggle. I like South Alabama under 6.5 wins. I have them below 6 wins in my projections. I just think defensively they're going to take so many steps back that in a conference where everyone can score, that's a problem.
All right, let's wrap on this, and you can read up on every single team in the Sun Belt, courtesy of Adam Burke and the VSiN College Football Betting Guide. But once again, we're up against it because we have to host VSiN Primetime. Thank you, America, for making it so close that we had to delay the podcast. All right, Adam, best of the rest, so to speak. Any worthy notes on Troy, Arkansas State, Marshall, Coastal Carolina, Georgia Southern, Old Dominion, Southern Miss, Georgia State, or UL Monroe, who very might be the worst team in all of college football?
So UL Monroe is a team I want to talk about because you know me. I like to go dumpster diving in college football a little bit. This team won't be good. I can assure you of that. I mean, they were 2-10 last year. I only have them projected for 2.49 wins. They won't be good. However,
oh boy,
Bryant Vincent takes over as the head coach. And he was the offensive coordinator at UAB. The UAB players really tried to rally around him for the job when Bill Clark stepped down, but UAB wound up going with Trent Dilfer. But Bryant Vincent last year, not with UAB, was the offensive coordinator at New Mexico. New Mexico in 2022, 3.94 yards per play on offense. They were 131st in the nation in yards per play. You can almost fall forward as a running back and have like 4 yards per carry. They had 3.94 yards per play in 2022. With Bryant Vincent running the offense last year, 6.21 yards per play. They were 35th in the country. So Vincent is a guy who can kind of make a five-star dish out of, you know, bad ingredients, right? I think UL Monroe will be a really good over team from a week-to-week basis this season because the defense is still going to be bad. The defense will not take any significant strides forward. But I think the offense will definitely improve. So I think UL Monroe overs on a week-by-week basis will be a good look here with the Warhawks.
All right, I was nervous you were going to say over season win total.
Oh, no.
Okay.
No.
Overs on the Warhawks.
No, but I think the offense will be a lot better. I really do. And again, keep in mind, they're going to trail in a lot of games,
that's
too.
That's true.
So they're going to have to kind of go a little bit with tempo, throw a little bit more. I think those are all positive things. Again, it's not all about betting into the futures markets. It's about having a blueprint of what you want to do week to week.
If you want to read about every ACC team, AAC team, and Sun Belt team, Adam broke it down for us in the VSiN College Football Betting Guide, available at VSiN.com. We've got a bunch of different offers out there, including the special $350 for 3 total years. So we got a lot going on, our best offer ever. You can follow him on Twitter at Skating Tripods. I'm at One Tim Murray. Once again, hit us with a rate, review, and a subscription to the podcast. Let's keep it rolling as we get closer and closer to the college football season and getting back with Adam each and every week once he catches his breath with all of these guides that we're putting out at VSiN. Thanks to producer Ryan, who we made work late on this podcast. I am Tim Murray. We will talk to you early next week right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.